Hi, everybody. It's Brian Greene from the Commercial Break Podcast. It's likely you've heard of the show if you're directly related to me or you follow our MySpace page. But I'm not here to talk to those three listeners. I'm here to appeal to people who haven't heard the show. Along with my co-host, Kristen Joy Hoadley, we're taking a deeper look at the topics that are affecting our youth today. Like, who are the people who are dating ghosts? Where did all these pickup artists come from? And why doesn't my preacher have a nicer private jet? We understand that these are the issues you really want to get to the bottom of. The Commercial Break is now available on the Odyssey app or wherever you find your podcasts.
We have none other than Buffalo's own Washington insider, Dave Leventhal. Dave, good morning.
Good morning to you, Joe.
Now, I know it's going to be tough to talk anything other than the Bills today, Dave, but this is the assignment we've been given. And first off, it's been a crazy week in Washington, to say the least.
One of the craziest weeks that we've had in Washington and in years, and that is saying just a little bit, given the myriad crazy things that happen in Washington, D.C. So, I mean, look, if you didn't expect this to happen, if you were surprised by the actions that Donald Trump took, if you are shocked by the trajectory of the way things materialized between Monday, when Donald Trump put his hand or came close to putting his hand on the Bible, I should say, he actually didn't. And the end of this week, and we're shocked by the things that happened in the interim. Then you were not paying attention during the campaign, because Donald Trump has done exactly what he said he was going to do. He telegraphed everything that happened this week from a country mile away. He's been talking about it for months, arguably years on some points. And he delivered. And of course, for about half of America, that was as exciting gets. And for the other half of America, people are pretty apoplectic. But one thing is very true about this week is that Donald Trump flooded the zone in a way that really no politician, certainly no president, has ever done so quickly in their first couple of days as president after taking the oath of office. And that is very much by design. And it's very difficult to mount an opposition to an incoming president and what he's trying to do when literally 200 different things in the form of executive orders and other directives are all taking place simultaneously at the same time and coming down. So the Democrats have been flailing this week in a major way, really kind of going from one extreme of, well, look, we'll just see how this all settles out. We'll see how this plays out, to on the other extreme, attempting to issue by issue, item by item, defend against what Donald Trump has done. And I think that just speaks to the moment that we're at right now. That's going to change. But in the interim, it's been absolutely chaotic for the opposition. And it's been exactly as planned for the Republicans and Donald Trump.
So that first day, Dave, that inauguration day from inside the Capitol, I mean, right there, different than what most of us are used to. And it's been, what, 40 years since there was an inauguration in the Capitol. Then you had the parade at the arena, and then President Trump went right to the Oval Office. Obviously, don't go through all of them, but what are some of the executive orders he signed on that first day that really are eye-popping?
Yeah, well, first to the scene, it was 1985, Ronald Reagan, his second inaugural that we have to go back to in order to find an inauguration that was conducted inside. And it was conducted inside the Rotunda, just as Donald Trump's inauguration was this time around. But this was quintessentially Donald Trump, even if it was indoors, and that the parade and the rally, very reminiscent of a campaign rally that Donald Trump would have during the campaign. That was his inauguration party, as opposed to throngs of people on the National Mall. I actually was on the National Mall, freezing with maybe about 3,000 or 4,000 other Trump supporters who were out there, who were celebrating him, and there at noon in front of the Capitol. And they were very cold, but they were very festive, and they were very joyous, as you might imagine. And in talking with a lot of them, they pretty much underscored and foreshadowed and predicted what we just talked about, which is that Donald Trump is going to come in. He's going to be as aggressive as he can possibly be. And that was what they were expecting, and that's what they got. But in terms of the specific actions that Donald Trump has been taking, I mean, where do we start? He froze hiring for the federal workforce, or much of the federal workforce. He attacked a whole variety of government agencies that he considers to be the quote-unquote deep state. Now that's his administration, and he's very much trying to make this administration in his own image and not that of Joe Biden or just some kind of anonymous, faceless bureaucracy. He attempted to end birthright citizenship for people who are born in this country to non-U.S. citizens, although that is something, along with several other of his priorities, that will absolutely be litigated and is already being litigated. So that's not something that instantaneously came into being. He has pursued undocumented immigrants across the country. He has attacked diversity and inclusion initiatives in government. So he's had a flurry of nominations that have gone through the Senate, not the least of which would be Pete Hegseth, who is now the defense secretary. Very controversial, of course. He has had numerous problems in his past in regards to alcohol and infidelity and the management of some nonprofits that he was ahead of, but ultimately got the votes that he needed by J.D. Vance, the vice president, casting a tie-breaking vote already as vice president and leader of the Senate to get him over the goal line. And then, of course, there are the pardons, Joe, the 1,500 pardons or other clemency actions that pertain to people who were involved and convicted of crimes on January 6, 2021, who attacked the U.S. Capitol in Donald Trump's name. And highly, highly controversial, maybe the most controversial action of this week, in the sense that Donald Trump has always talked about law and order and backing the blue and supporting the police. And I talked to a lot of Republicans this week who considered that particular decision and it being a blanket pardon for all intents and purposes for everyone without individually reviewing the cases, they considered it to be dissonant and incongruent with the idea of supporting police, given that more than 140 police officers were injured and a couple died as a result of their injuries or the experience. And again, we're just beginning here. there were 15 inspectors general who are sort of the, you know, front line at the tip of the spear of draining the proverbial swamp and making sure that waste, fraud, and abuse are not part of government. They were dismissed, and potentially illegally, because Congress is supposed to get a 30 days heads up on that happening. Eliminating FEMA, buying Greenland. I mean, it's just everything happening all at once. And again, it's incredibly difficult for anyone to focus on any one thing who is opposed to what Donald Trump is doing because of just the flurry and the torrent of activity and actions that are taking place all in the span of less than a week.
The Hegseth vote, and, you know, we followed that here at WBEN. The great David Bellavia's letter was read as part of the opening of the hearing that happened a week or so ago. Now, was that a surprise that it was going to be 50-50? Because J.D. Vance seemed out of breath when he turned the mic on. Did they have any heads up that McConnell was going to switch to no?
Not much. And there was a procedural vote where Mitch McConnell, a senator from Kentucky, former leader of the Senate Republicans, he advanced the vote in a procedural vote, but ultimately voted against the nomination. Mitch McConnell is going to be a really curious outlier for potentially for a number of votes going forward over the next 2 years in the Senate. He's definitely going to be a wild card, and he feels very untethered at this point, given that Donald Trump and him are not exactly friends. He feels pretty free to go and do his own thing, in part because he's likely not to run for re-election a couple of years from now when his term is up. So that was, we knew that Susan Collins, the senator from Maine, and Lisa Murkowski, the senator from Alaska, both Republicans, pretty clear sense that they were going to vote against Hegseth's nomination. But McConnell was definitely one that surprised a lot of people. But it wasn't enough for Republicans internally to torpedo Hegseth's nomination. And it caused a tie vote. It shows that a Senate majority or a House majority, because they are so thin, is no guarantee of legislative success for Donald Trump on everything. Although on this one, it was enough to put him over the goal line. And J.D. Vance had to go up to the U.S. Capitol and do what he did when he was a senator not many weeks ago, which was go ahead and vote on a major issue before the Senate.
The upcoming nominations. Now, Kristi Noem was then easily confirmed. The other big names that are being talked, surprisingly, are former Democrats, Tulsi Gabbard and RFK Jr. A lot of eyes on that, Dave. When will we see those confirmation hearings and those brought to a vote?
Yeah, so to set the stage just a little bit, I think Pete Hegseth is a very, kind of prototypical nominee for Donald Trump, in the sense that this is somebody who may not necessarily have a ton of government experience or relevant government experience to the job that he is doing. Department of Defense, it only has a $1 trillion budget and represents about, a little less than a fifth of the entire spending of the U.S. government. But I don't say that jokingly. I say that very seriously, that Donald Trump is looking for people who are going to disrupt. He's looking for people to be put into leadership positions, to be installed into leadership positions that are going to shake things up in a way that he has promised to do as president of the United States. So Pete Hegseth is a very logical choice for Donald Trump, even if it is an illogical choice for others who are not Donald Trump. Okay, now, that's where you get to Tulsi Gabbard and RFK Jr. Why would Donald Trump pick people who are former Democrats, and not former Democrats a decade ago or a generation ago, but one who ran for president as a Democrat in 2020, and another who ran for president as a Democrat in 2024 until they switched and changed, and now here they are on the precipice of going into Donald Trump's administration. Tulsi Gabbard is somebody who has definitely had a most curious national intelligence and security trajectory to get to the point where she is today. You can better believe that she's going to face some withering questions from Democrats, but also probably too from some Republicans about her meetings with Bashar al-Assad and going to Russia and actions that she sort of unilaterally took when she was a member of the U.S. House that raised eyebrows at the time and are going to come back maybe to bite her, maybe not, during her nomination hearing, which we expect is going to happen either later this month or early in February, and we'll be going through the process likely at the committee level first. As for RFK Jr., here's somebody who has been outspoken about his feelings on vaccinations and that he doesn't believe that many of them should happen or be necessary or be mandatory. He is talking a very strong game as the Health and Human Services nominee, as somebody who would remake that particular government agency. He skipped a meeting recently that was about vaccines. We're talking some pretty withering questions there too on that front from largely Democrats, but also potentially too from some Republicans who are very concerned about his sort of unorthodox trajectory to get to the point to where he is right now. So those are just two nominees, but also two people who are absolutely the Donald Trump archetype for disruption and for changing the way that government works. If Donald Trump says he's going to totally shake things up, these are two very good people to put into those positions if that is the goal for Donald Trump, which it clearly is.
And Friday, President Trump visited Carolina, California, and ended his day in Las Vegas. In California, obviously, lots of social media postings with Gavin Newsom meeting him on the tarmac, and then his back and forth with L.A. Mayor Karen Bass got a lot of attention.
Yeah, and this is a big question, and I think one that after the dust settles of this first week or this first month.
Hi, everybody. It's Brian Green from the Commercial Break Podcast. It's likely you've heard of the show if you're directly related to me or you follow our MySpace page. But I'm not here to talk to those three listeners. I'm here to appeal to people who haven't heard the show. Along with my co-host Kristen Joy Hoadley, we're taking a deeper look at the topics that are affecting our youth today. Like, who are the people who are dating ghosts? Where did all these pickup artists come from? And why doesn't my preacher have a nicer private jet? We understand that these are the issues you really want to get to the bottom of. The Commercial Break is now available on the Odyssey app or wherever you find your podcasts.
Month of Donald Trump being president, this is going to be a big question because we're having a sort of an unprecedented level of major natural disasters happening in very close proximity to one another. And a question that a lot of voters are going to be asking is, hey, Donald Trump may be doing a lot of things right now that, hey, they feel good and he is making good on his promises and he's doing all the things that he said during the campaign. And they're going to be really happy about that and should be, given that that he's doing what he said he was going to do in the campaign. And he got elected. A majority of voters supported him. He won the Electoral College. But the question will be, will voters feel like his decisions are making their lives better? And if you live in a disaster zone, if you have been struck by an unexpected hurricane and no longer have a house because you live in North Carolina, or if a wildfire has torn through your neighborhood and literally reduced blocks and blocks to ashes, as has been the case throughout California, the LA County area, is Donald Trump, is the national government doing everything that it possibly can do to help you rebuild your life and the life of your family? So people who are in a situation like that, I don't think I'm telling anyone anything they don't know, that the first thing that they care about, the first thing that is going to be on their mind is, how can they recover? And are they concerned about politics? Are they concerned about a political back and forth? Are they considering sniping between Democrats and Republicans when they're just trying to figure out, well, how am I going to pay bills? How am I going to find shelter and food and keep my family safe? No, they're not. And why would they be? So if Donald Trump, he's talking about lots of things. He's talking about getting rid of FEMA, which would be a pretty dramatic action and allow the states to take the lead on going ahead and providing disaster recovery and disaster relief facilities and financing. I mean, this is a major, major change, considering that the job of the federal government in large part fundamentally is to keep American citizens safe. So, you know, that's going to be something that will be debated, I expect, in a major way going forward, if not so much now because of all the other things happening, as to what is the role of the federal government when it comes to responding to disasters. And there will be more. And that's not going to change. And what should the federal government's role be vis-a-vis the states when it comes to the response to those disasters? That's a big question for the federal government and for Donald Trump. And I think we got an inconclusive answer to that, at least at this point, during Donald Trump's first week.
Now, Dave, I do want to go back to Monday before Donald Trump was the 47th president and Joe Biden was still president. We talked about the January 6th pardons from President Trump. President Biden had some interesting pardons on his way out the door as well.
Oh, he sure as heck did. And then I think this raises the issue of, well, you know, what's the new normal for pardons? And Joe Biden pardoned members of his family. I mean, there were many, many Democrats, including some who I talked to, who felt like, oh, this is like the worst thing that he could do. He's undercutting his ability, and more importantly for them, Democrats' abilities, to say anything about any of the pardons that Donald Trump would be putting forth. So is the new normal here is that, if you're president of the United States, you're going to take this singular constitutional power that you have. Nobody else can pardon anybody at the federal level except for the president of the United States. And you will take that power and just look after your family or look after your closest associates. Now, Donald Trump did this on his way out the door in pretty stark fashion back in 2020 and 2021 in the final days of his presidency. Joe Biden did the same thing, and this is not false equivalency here. This is just equivalency. They are both doing the same thing. And Joe Biden did so, of course, for different reasons, at least as he stated it, to say, I'm going to offer preemptive pardons because I'm afraid that Donald Trump is going to come in and wrongfully pursue members of my family who don't deserve that. Well, highly controversial, again, not just with Republicans, but with many, many Democrats, too, who felt that that was completely, totally and unabashedly counterproductive. But then Donald Trump comes and sweeps in, and one of his first actions is, again, to pardon more than 1,500 people who were convicted of crimes, many of whom were convicted of violent crimes, attacking police officers, breaking and damaging and defacing things in the U.S. Capitol, and otherwise acting out in a violent way. That all got wiped away, including people who were leaders of far, far right organizations that are patently violent and have violence is part of what they do, including the Oath Keepers. So that is something Donald Trump is going to have to own. It's something that he obviously felt was a priority for him, but some Republicans felt like that maybe not the best move there. And I would expect that we are going to have some debate going forward as to whether the president should have the same powers going forward as it relates to the pardon, although I would note very quickly that this is a constitutional function, and amending the Constitution is almost impossible these days. The last time we had a constitutional amendment, we have to go all the way back to when the Buffalo Bills were in their four Super Bowls. It was 1992. I mean, this is a very, very difficult thing to do. And although it may be debated and talked about, it's likely not going to come to pass now or anytime soon.
Dave, I know it's way too early to ask you this question, but CNN did a story, I think it was on Friday, about President Trump's approval rating going into a second term higher than a plus six net approval. He's never seen a plus six net approval as president. But, looking at presidents in their first month, their first weeks in office, does that number usually start to dip that early? I mean, it seems like we get very unhappy with the sitting president very quick in this country.
Yes. Voters are fickle. If they just elected somebody, they want to see them act. Now, Donald Trump is, again, we've said this several times now, he's done just that. So that is heartening his supporters, the people who voted for him, because they're getting exactly what they were promised, and even then some. So that has been of great joy and delight to all of them. But that's not going to last forever. The honeymoon period will end at some point in the relatively near future, maybe days or maybe a few weeks. But Donald Trump is not going to get every last thing that he wants. So when he begins to lose legal battles, if that happens, if some Republicans within his own caucus in the U.S. House, where he just has a couple vote majority, or the U.S. Senate, where that majority, again, is just a handful of votes, is in bills that he wants passed or not coming to his desk because Congress is standing in the way, what's going to happen then? Is there going to be frustration? Is it going to be a situation where voters begin to question whether he truly is able to deliver on the promises that he made? And also, to what is he going to say? What is he going to do? What's going to be the latest flavor of the week for Donald Trump? Love Donald Trump or loathe Donald Trump? He oftentimes can jump from one issue to another, the drop of a hat or the typing of a Truth Social post at 3 a.m. And suddenly you wake up and you are very surprised to read or see or hear what just happened overnight. So is Donald Trump going to be able to stay focused? That I think is a question in his own inner circle that is constantly debated. And are the people around him going to be able to, put kind of walls around him? Unlikely that that is going to happen. So to the extent that Donald Trump can remain disciplined on the issues that he's talking about and in acting on now, I think that's a big question as to how effective he is going to be early on in terms of advancing his agenda, and how the public is going to react to that and respond to that. And those approval numbers will likely go up or down as a result of the actions that are taking place.
Dave, you have a story out about all the subscriptions the Trump White House has signed up for this week.
Yeah, analyzed using federal records, a question that I had been asking myself. Donald Trump, of course, constantly talks about the fake news media, and he has said literally dozens upon dozens of very negative things about the press. They are liars, they are cheaters, they are frauds, they are awful, terrible, they are out to get him. So I wondered what Donald Trump actually pays to subscribe to, and looked at federal spending records and looked at the committees that he controls: his presidential campaign committee, his leadership political action committee, the Republican National Committee. And the bottom line is that Donald Trump pays to subscribe to about 65 different publications all across the country, and some internationally as well. And ended up with some names that you would know, with the New York Times and the Washington Post and the Wall Street Journal and the LA Times and others, spending, in some cases, thousands of dollars to subscribe to those publications. I talked to a publisher down in Augusta, Georgia, and Donald Trump, his Republican allies, had invited a reporter from that paper to come to Donald Trump's office that was opening up in a county in Georgia, and the reporter shows up and then was summarily turned away and ejected from the event because the Trump campaign didn't want him there. The next day, the Trump campaign subscribed to the paper, so and they kept subscribing. So I think that's an indication that even if Donald Trump very much rhetorically is talking out against the media in the ways that he does almost on a weekly or daily basis, that he's very, very, very interested in what those publications are saying about him and writing about him. And I talked to a number of news executives for this story that appeared in the Ankler publication out on the West Coast. And they basically said, yeah, we're delighted that he's a subscriber. Some were surprised, others were not, but they all basically said in one form or fashion that they feel like Donald Trump is unique in his interest in what people are saying about him. So that the data seems to support that idea that Donald Trump very much is.
All right. Well, Dave, it's almost time. We're 6.5 hours away from kickoff. Kansas City, Bills, Chiefs. How you feeling?
Oh, I'm calm. I'm cool. I'm collected. Joe, I mean, my insides are liquefying, as are everyone else's in Buffalo. I mean, this is about as tense as it gets. I tossed and turned overnight, and I am hardly alone, I suspect, in that state of being right now. I mean, the anticipation is overwhelming. I just want the game to begin. I want this to happen. And at 10 o'clock tonight, I want us to be texting each other in ways that we never have before, all for the good. So let's go. Let's win this game, and let's go to the Super Bowl.
I'm overly excited. And Brian Mazurowski said something this week that has stuck with me, and I shouldn't say it this close to the game, but like, I feel very confident the Bills will beat the Chiefs. But, I mean, you know, I was 5 last time they were in the Super Bowl. I can't picture the Bills in the Super Bowl. It's like, yeah, they're going to beat the Chiefs. Oh, no, they're not going to be in the Super Bowl. It's like, it's such a weird phenomenon for me.
I attended Super Bowl 25 in person, and that experience has lived with me and inside of me for the rest of my life. And I'm ready for it to not, at least so much anymore. So let's take care of business today, and then let's have a conversation from there, a conversation that many, many, many hundreds of thousands and millions of members of Bills Mafia will be having at the same time.
Well, I'm telling you, Dave, the Bills have only played NFC East teams in the Super Bowl, and we know for a fact that an NFC East team will be in the Super Bowl. I mean, it's all playing out.
It is all playing out, and let it play out, and let it play out in our favor.
I hope so. Dave, I look forward to that text tonight, and that's when we will talk next. You have yourself a great Sunday. Go Bills, and we'll talk soon, my friend.
Go Bills.
Hi, everybody. It's Brian Green from the Commercial Break Podcast. It's likely you've heard of the show if you're directly related to me or you follow our MySpace page. But I'm not here to talk to those three listeners. I'm here to appeal to people who haven't heard the show. Along with my co-host, Kristen Joy Hoadley, we're taking a deeper look at the topics that are affecting our youth today. Like, who are the people who are dating ghosts? Where did all these pickup artists come from? And why doesn't my preacher have a nicer private jet? We understand that these are the issues you really want to get to the bottom of. The Commercial Break is now available on the Odyssey app or wherever you find your podcasts.